the person that I wanted to speak about today, yard site is Yud Gimel Nissen, is A. Mitzar Atzmoy, one of the giants of all dairies, the Mechaba, Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Mitzar Sheni, he lived in a Tkufa that was extraordinary. There was a lot, the Tkufa is an extraordinary, pivotal Tkufa in Klal Yisrael. And his work and the things that he's done really are a briach atichin. And we'll try to, again, look at it in the context of things that are significant for us, Ladeiros, and so on. Where did I get my information from? And we've made it each time the Beis Yosef lived, let's say, 500 years ago. More or less, a little bit, he died a little bit less than 500 years ago, was born a little earlier than 500 years ago. So, how do I know what I know? So, a very important question. So, the truth is, there's a lack of Mekairis, and what we have is as follows. There's a sefer called Kairi HaDairis, written by Yitzhak Kanfiru. He lived like two generations afterwards. This is close enough to have some information from grandchildren and so on. That's one source. We have his tshuva sfarim, which is another source, Dafkas Reichel. So that's an important source of historical information, certainly for dating. There are occasional historical notes. When he finishes his Pirush on the tour and Beis Yosef, he writes where he started and so on. Those are basically what we have. A little bit we have contemporaries of his. It was already a tkufa when people were writing tshuvas back and forth, and b'meila you have people talking about people, so you have some information there also. But there's missing stuff, and usually when there's missing stuff, you get all sorts of maiselach, which you can take or leave, not of any great significance. But there are chlal, a generally important, safer for biographical information is the chidah kaddish. Chidah was very reliable. Chidah, besides being a gadol admoi, the Chidah was also a real scholar. He went and looked for documents and researched and a tremendous amount of work. Doesn't bring all that much information on the Beis Yosef. So really, the Kairi HaDairis is one source, not impeccable. And then you have the stuff that he wrote and so on. A more contemporary work that brings a lot of those Mekairis and written by somebody from... was a sefer on the Beis Yosef. There was a Yid named Rav Greenwald. I think his name was Rav Yekusiel Greenwald. He was a Rav in Columbus, Ohio in the 30s. He wrote a Kolben Avelus. He wrote on Rav Yosef Cairo, and he brings a lot of historic information. He has certain hasharas that you can agree or disagree, but at least he presents it. I think this is true, and this is the reason why I think this is true, and you can, you know, you can make up, at least you can have some sense of it. Those are the Mekairis that we'll use basically. The Tkufa he lived in was an incredible Tkufa. He was born 1488, which was 4 years before the Geir Sfarat. So he himself was already, didn't grow up in Spain, but he was of that stock. His family ran right to Portugal, and 4 years later kicked out of Portugal. So at the age of eight, basically, he's left the Iberian Peninsula. Where do you go to? Where did the Jews go to from Spain? And this is going to be, it's a very important piece in history. Some Jews went to North Africa. North Africa is close to Spain. So some Jews found there, but there were problems there also. The place where most of Spanish Jewry that left went, and much of Spanish Jewry didn't leave, they stayed and assimilated, unfortunately, but those that left, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you see Hashkocha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Makdim before Lamaka. The Christian empire had split into two. There was the Western Empire, Emperor, capital, that was Rome. And there was the Eastern, that was Byzantium, which is Turkey today. And the Turkish, that's where the Orthodox churches come from. Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, that's from the eastern portion of that empire. The Constantinople, which was Byzantium, was a city that was considered to be impregnable. And I think they made a cheshbon, they needed a minimal amount of people to watch it. And it like the rest of Rome, it rotted away inside with all of its own problems. The Kesher Shoyim is not min haminyan, it doesn't last. But it wasn't easy to conquer. And through by incredible fortune, in 1442 or 3 or 4, that Kufa, about 50 years before, there was a very strong Muslim, Ottoman Turks, a strong kind of a little bit of a very warrior type, a little bit a stridently Muslim group that conquered Constantinople and made it into a Muslim empire. They were very religious Muslims, but also very, very practical rulers. And they said, we need Jews. And they welcomed Jews to come live there. And when the Jews were thrown out of Spain, most of them ended up in Constantinople, Andrapil, the areas Greece, also parts of Greece had fall under them. Also, they were over that area, the parts of the Balkans, Turkey, and so on. And Jews not only were welcomed there, they could flourish, businesses, and everything like it. So it was mamash maktim, like 1,000 years they've waited, and then it exploded just before they needed it, and then most of the Jews found refuge in Turkey. So Turkey, the Turkish countries, it's hard, they don't follow exactly the same maps as today, but those areas, the Jews there are closest to the Spanish Portuguese Messiah than the other place. There were some in Holland that had found refuge, but the majority was in Turkey, and that was really where the most ended up, including the Beis Yosef. There are a few big centers there. Andriapol was one, and Salonika, which is today Greece, and it's a Greek city really, but it was under the Turkish Empire, and the Ottoman Empire, and that was a big Makom Torah as well. The Beis Yosef ended up there and grew up there. We don't know who he learned by. We know very little about who his Rebbeim were. He mentions his father, Ephraim Karo, in Halacha too. He mentions in certain of the Tshuvas, he treats Rabbi Yosef Teitzak, who was in the Gedolim at that time. He writes the Mayav of Rebbe, and he's very humble, but are very unclear if he learned by him. Pashas, he didn't learn by him. He only came to know him later, and therefore he treats him with great deference, as befits a God Ladar. But, you know, that type of deference. But it wasn't a real Talmud Rebbe relationship. We don't have any idea of really who his Rebbeim were and so on. We just know that at the age of his early 30s, he was already recognized as an Adam Gadol. Tshuvas was sent to him, Shaios was sent to him, and he started working on his magnum opus, which is the Beis Yosef, not the Shulchan Aruch. First, let's describe the Sefarim that he wrote in his lifetime. So, the major work is the Beis Yosef. Let's explain what the Beis Yosef is, so that we understand. The Halacha Sefarim had been written three. The Rif, which is, as all we know, a condensation of the Gemara Halacha. The Rambam, that completely recasts the Gemara in Torah. So it's it's taking, you know, again, everybody here has learned to sing the Rambam. The Torah, I'm assuming how many have actually seen Torah as much. The Torah was a compromise in the following sense. The Rambam is very clear, it goes by topic, and it tells you exactly what the halacha is, according to Rambam. The problem with it is that it leaves out all the machlokes rishonim, and you don't have no idea who, what, when, where, other than the Rambam. The Torah goes by topics, like the same Simon Shulchan Aruch. He brings the Gdolei Machlokes Rishonim, and he's Machriya most of the time. The Torah was the son of the Rosh. The Beis Yosef wrote a Pirush on it, which is physically much bigger than the Torah, and he wrote on it all of the Mekairis of the Torah. He takes the Gemara, brings it down word for word, explains, brings the Rishonim, explains the point. He went through an exhaustive library of Tshuva Sfarim and other Sfarim and brings them down. He Ke'ilu brought a yam of Inyanim that the Tur either was Meramis, didn't bring, and really is a completion to the Tur. That's what the Beis Yosef is. It's an incredibly large work. He went to Salonika. Salonika was a wealthy city, and they had a huge library to be able to find all the different Sfarim you would ever need, and wrote out the Beis Yosef, which is incredibly large, and is Hashlama to the Torah. That was one Sefer. The Kesef Mishnah, which appears on the Rambam, again, his Mekairis, and being done on the Rambam, he started early, but he didn't finish it. He finished it, and it came out after he died. He finished it Mamash Soif Yamav. He lived long. He was 87 when he was Nifta. That's the second Sefer. The Shulchan Aruch was a Sefer he put out after putting out the Torah in the Beis Yosef. And in many ways, it's a misleading Sefer. I many times expressed it. The Shulchan Aruch is not meant to be a Sefer. The Shulchan Aruch is an outline, really, of the halachas from the Beis Yosef and the Torah. It's done so that people can have quicker access. Many Achronim write, the Sma, the Bach, and others write, that you're not allowed to pass on Shulchan Aruch unless you learn to turn the Beis Yosef. Shulchan Aruch is there sort of as an index almost. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch is a Sefer. It's not structured really, because it's simply taking the halachas out of the Torah Beis Yosef. The real Sefer is the Torah Beis Yosef. But those were his three major Sfarim. Besides that, he wrote Tshuvas called Afkas HaReichel. He put it together. And Tshuvas on Ebenezer we have. And a few other small. He wrote a Sefer called Darkei Talmud. It's a Hashlama to other Sfarim. To another Sefer about Inyanim of the Talmud. And finally, we'll speak later about the Magid Meisharim. But those are the Sfarim he wrote. It was an incredible debate. The Beis Yosef is an incredible Sefer in its breadth, in its scope. It almost leaves nothing out. When it came out, actually, he started when he was 32 years old. When it came out, the Marie Ben Lev, I think, said that people should not look at it, they shouldn't learn it, because they'll stop learning. They'll just use the Beis Yosef. They don't have to learn the Gemara and the Sugis, they just go through Beis Yosef. They'll start with the Torah Beis Yosef. Little did they know how many Kitzurim would come out afterwards. So somebody writes, one of his Talmidim writes, that up to that time, the Marie Belev used to learn Torah with his Talmidim, and he would, Baal Peh, tell them the Sugya and the Mekairis of the Torah. There was one place, when he came out and made that statement that you shouldn't learn from the Torah, from the Beis Yosef, the next time in Shir, he got stuck on something, and he couldn't remember where the Gemara is from, and then when he found it in the Beis Yosef, it was simple, something simple, and he said it's an Einish, and he takes back his words about Beis Yosef. That's the another vignette I can tell you, a Maisa heard from a person who heard it klisheni. This I heard from a Yidr Moshe Koyen at Meir Vesrim. He's a man in his 90s now at Meir Vesrim, and he lives in Azizon Azavir as a Shachna of mine. His grandfather, he heard this from his grandfather, was by the Sfas Emes. The Ragachava was by the Sfas Emes. And the Sfas Emes says, the Ragachava, what does he learn? And he told him, Shas, Rambam, and Tur. So the Sasemis says with Beis Yosef, he said, no, tur. So he said, and we're, how do you know the Mekoiris of the Halachas of the tur? So the Ragashav told him, I can figure it out. I don't need the Beis Yosef. I have the Bekiyas myself. So the Sfasemis asked him 10 tours, on 10 different tours, where the Makar is. This is from the grandfather of Moshe Karin, who was at the time. 9 of them he whipped out exactly like the Beis Yosef. The 10th one he said one that's not like the Beis Yosef. So the Sfasemis told him, Beis Yosef is this. He says, I think what I say is not less. So they started arguing. And then as they're arguing, we mefalpul, the Sfasemis grabs his finger, his hand, and he says, Rav Yosha. So Rav Yosef in Chiba in Yiddish. What difference does it, you know, how are we adding Kvayt Shemayim? What difference does this argument make to Ribbono Shel Olam? What Kvayt Shemayim are we adding by it? That was just a vignette that I happened to hear. But Al Kapana shows you the Cheshivas of the Beis Yosef and the Tur, the way people looked at Tur and Beis Yosef was the core of modern halacha, in a way that the Rambam is not. The Rambam is the Rambam, and that's it's not the halacha. And Shulchan Aruch is considered to be not extensive enough. It's a guide to where to find the Tur and Beis Yosef in a certain sense. There's a chros in Shulchan Aruch, but Al Kapanim, that's what it is. He in Turkey, one thing we know from contemporaries is he had a magid, meaning some sort of malach that spoke to him. But there's some controversy about a sefer that was written about Magid Meshar, but that he had him who told him that he must go to Eretz Yisrael. And he went to Tzfas. Now, let's just first give some sense. In Turkey, one of the big issues, one of the big problems, Bechlau, let's explain one of the issues of that tkufa, which is an issue that you see in the tshuvas of the Beis Yosef as well. Kehillas lived in enclosed, clearly defined areas for hundreds of years, and every makom had its minhagim and so on and so forth. And changing minhagim and changing things like that were usur. And strongly enforced, and it was not such an issue. When you took 50,000 Jews out of Spain and tossed them into a whole bunch of places, all of a sudden you had different communities. So if 1,000 Spanish Jews end up in Andropola, is that a new kehillah? Must they be involved with the old kehillah? Can they have their own psukim, their own rabbanim, their own communal structure? Issues like that, there were tremendous machlokas with that. Those are issues that crept up, and there are tshuvas on being allowed to be part of a bezdin or not, and so on. And it was riven with these machlokas. From there, he went to Tzfas in Eretz Yisrael. Tzfas doesn't exist in the Gemara's time. As far as we know, there's no people identified Tzipor, it is that we don't have any clear identification of the city Tzfas with anything, not in Tanakh, not in Gemara. But the common understanding is that it's not. What was unique about Tzfas? It seems, for whatever reason, Tzfas was extremely successful economically. And there was a lot of agriculture around there. There was cloth business, manufacturing. It was on a road that went to Damascus and so on. It was a it was a wealthy place. It had quite a lot of people there, a lot of families. And it became a hub of Torah learning that hadn't been in centuries. In that Kufa, including Goyle Sfarad, you had in Tzfas a concentration of people of Gedolei Olam that I don't think we ever had before. In the same city and place, you had at various times, most of the time together, the Beis Yosef, the Arizal, the Ramak, the Shlomo Alkavitz, the Balach HaRedim, the Medrash Shmuel as Radi and in Pirkei Avos, the Mabit, the Maribei Rav who was Cheshevet in them. It was an incredible city of Gedol Olam. Possibly never been before, told the times of the Gemara maybe, and never afterwards, did you have one small place, such a concentration of Gedol Olam. And in that place was where the Beis Yosef functioned, the Arizal functioned, and so on. The Beis Yosef was recognized as the Gadol. The Maribei Rav was bigger than him. An extraordinary parasha happened. I don't want to be Meir because I think it's worth spending an hour on its own for it. Sometime we'll do it. Was the attempt to reestablish smicha in Klal Yisrael. The Rabbanim decided, based on the Rambam, that you can reestablish smicha if all Gdolos got together. They got together, and they made the Maribei Rav. They gave him smicha. The Maribei Rav gave four people smicha. The Beis Yosef was one of them. There was a big machlekes, and it froze. So they never had a Sanhedrin, but they had a smicha. It's incredible that the Shohar who we live from is on somebody who had smicha, real smicha of the type of Sanhedrin. It was a huge parsha with tremendously vehement letters back and forth, whether they can do it, can't do it. Terrible machloikis. It's a very famous piece in history. Maybe someday we'll talk about the Maribei Rav. It's something worth going through because it's really sort of a watershed in history. Al Kalpanim, what was the incentive for the smicha? One of the reasons seems to be because of this was the first time that the machlokas of different communities was sharply highlighted. You had different communities in one place with different minhagim and at loggerheads. Al Kapanim, whatever it is, the Rebbe Iskar had smicha. Let's talk a little bit about some of the shailas and tshuvas. He lived to be 87 when he was nifta. He had three children. He had three wives. They were nifta, and he had at least two sons that we know of. One of them married Arizal's daughter. So the two great houses in Klal Yisrael, the house of Halacha and the house of Kabbalah, actually were united, and they were shtarach. The Beis Yosef, when he came back from the Tnoyim of his son to Arizal's daughter, told his wife, and this is recorded, that he heard such wonderful things from Arizal. He says he doesn't know if there's any place in the universe where such divrei Elokim Chayim are given over. Tremendous hafloga of what it was. Let's take a look. The tshuvas we have in Afkas Reichel would be fascinating to touch on a few of them just to get a sense of what was happening at the time and what was going on. There were three, the Velt maps out that his big Bar Plukta is the Mabit. It's not really true. The Mabit and him had tremendous yachas of mutual respect, tremendous. But I want to go through four nyanim that they were cholik. It was very sharp, some little sharp. There was no pulling punches when it came to Emes. One was a big machlokas, which is halacha today, it's still nogea. When you buy fruits and vegetables from Goyim and Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, are you mafish shumas and maizes or not? Beis Yosef said yes. He said, Alpidin as it comes out. Mabit said they never used to do it. And the Mabit made a cheirim and anyone who does is mafish. And today in Eretz Yisrael, it's a Nevrak and Yerushalayim macholuk on it. And it's a machloikis lahalokah that still is current. One. There was a machloikis, Mabit took issue with the fact that some of the young Talmidim of the Beis Yosef were paskening. He held they were too young, not roy enough. He was upset about it. That's an issue. There was a big machlokes on a woman whose husband drowned in a ship. There was a ship that got lost, and it was Mayim Shelem Soif, whether to be matir the agun or not. The mabit was the only one that was going to be matir, and he went ahead and was matir. And he said, but tonight at 12 I'm mitzarif, only one other was mitzarif to him. At the end, somebody was mekadosh that woman, and the Beis Yosef put out a cheirim that if he doesn't separate himself from the woman, the person is a cheirim. He came up very sharply. He held that the mabit himself is not enough to be matrit, and the mabit himself was matrit only with two people with him. Nobody held like him, and he put tremendous pressure to break it up. Very, very sharp. There was one more interesting inyan. The behemoths started having this is the Beis Yosef himself writes in his tshuvas. The animals had certain bleeding in the stomach. There was a question if they're treifas or not. The Mabit said it's only because they eat a certain grass. And the Beis Yosef held it's asa, it's a treifa. Mabit said they're not real treifas, it's they eat a certain grass that causes the bleeding. And it was makel, it was matir. The butchers began to be samech on the Mabit. They, listen, it's expensive meat and so on. And the Beis Yosef writes that dozens and dozens of people became very sick, and a few died from it, from eating meat of that behemoth, and the Mabit took back his psak. That's one topic that's Nagea, that a group of topics of his and Sefer. There's an interesting, occasionally you meet detractors, and somebody writes a very sharp letter against him, and basically he, in a very cynical way, he writes to the Beis Yosef that all he is a ma'asef. His sefer is not a big deal. He just gathered together all this farm. It's not a big chachma to take a simen shacharuch, a simen in the tour, and to bring all this farm. So basically he's a librarian, a glorified librarian. He's a ma'asef. And the Beis Yosef answers, being a ma'asif is not you can't be megana, you can't make fun of me, you can't give me covet. All that's important is, am I right, am I wrong? You know, skip the personal stuff. Am I right, am I wrong? The Chazon Ish told somebody once, I think somebody might have made a similar comment. The Chazon Ish says, take a look. He wrote, besides Afkas HaReichel, there's another Shaul HaTshuvah sefer called Shaul HaTshuvah Beis Yosef on Evin HaEzer. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's a collection. Over there in that Shaul HaTshuvah Beis Yosef, he also has odds and ends. Someone asked him, could you tell us over the shir that you gave in the yeshiva list yesterday? So he says, yeah, all right, b'kitzer. So the shir is on the sugya in Kedushin of Amenashe Yitzhaba. And he goes to the Mishnah. And then he says, okay, there are 27 different cases that are in the Mishnah. In other words, if you figure out every possibility, you're going to work it out to 27 nafkaminis. If they knew what he said, and he said yes, he didn't know what he said. He goes through all the shit. Then further on, he says, now, there are 21 different echetimtzes that these 27 make enough gemina lalacha. So the Chanis said there are 576 different halachas that Beis Yosef learned from the sugya. In other words, if you have this case with this tziruf, in this case with this tziruf, this case with this tziruf, that's how we learned. It is incredible yigia to map out that is really something incredible. And he says, so... And if you take a look in his tshuvas, he's not being massive. He puts down a sugya. He goes through a sugya and puts it down, and he maps it out. Very, very. And the pilpul, and then he says, it's his gadlus was that in his Beis Yosef and Kesef Mishnah and Shacharuch, where the tachas of the chibur was not to be mefalpul, he sticks to what he needs to stick to. But there was no shortcoming in the person that he couldn't do it. And it wasn't his intent was to do each sefer as he needed to be. In the Shocharuch, there are all sorts of issues, because sometimes he brings two shittas. Who do you paskin like? So there's a whole code that they've worked out. Does he bring them both as Yesh Omrim, one as V'yesh Omrim, one he brings and doesn't say Yesh Omrim, he brings sometimes Yesh Omrim without two shittas. There's an attempt to go through his to give some sort of guide to how to paskin in the Shocharuch. But it's not clear. It doesn't come from him. These. So there's an ongoing number of shittas in there. That was the chelik of nigla of the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef also had a chelik of nister. What's incredible is that he kept his kitchen separate. The fleishke kitchen, the little kitchen, was separate. There are a handful of places in Chorach where he brings a zayir kaddish in Beis Yosef also, but that's it. So many of his contemporaries write that he had a magid that was nisgalah to him. That we know. What we don't know is, 80 years after he was nifta, a sefer came out called Magid Meshar. There are a bunch of issues with the sefer. It's Torah that the magid told him and taught him. And told him. It's a feast, say the Chumash, so to speak. It goes up to, I don't know, halfway or something like that, maybe Bereshis Shmois. There is something we have that's for sure authentic. And that's the Shalar Kaddish, who lived in over there, years later, 70 years later, whatever, brings a letter from Shlomo Kavitz, describing the famous Shavuos night. Everybody must have read it and heard it, about what Shavuos night was like in Tzfas, and not in Tzfas, this was before, this was when he was still in Europe, I think, where they learned the first night, and the voice came to them. He said a voice came out of the Beis Yosef's mouth, and Shalom Aleichem, I'm the Neshama of the Mishnah, I've come to tell you what kind of Gevaldik is Simcha there is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if you'll learn, if you'll only keep doing it, so on and so forth, you don't know how much Nachs Ruach you bring up, so on. It's printed in the Shalom and Shavuos. This is where the meaning of being up Shavuos night comes from. Incredible letter. That's authentic. That's the Shalom Kodesh, a letter from Shlomo Kavitz, who was a Chaver Yedid Nefesh of the Beis Yosef. There's no doubt about that. The Sefer Magisham came out 80 years after he was Nifta. It wasn't put out by his grandchildren or the normal people would put it out. Not clear who put it out. It has a lot of strange things there. Things that think the Maggid tells the Beis Yosef, he will be zeicher to die al Kiddush Hashem like you want to. Beis Yosef died a natural death at 87. He writes all sorts of things about him, what will be, what won't be, and it didn't come true. Very hard to and strange things, and also something which jars people. He writes about the Beis Yosef in very, very grand, you're like the Rebbe Kaiser, also very, very extraordinary phrases. That the Maggid said it is not possibly a Chiddush, but that the Beis Yosef himself would print it is strange. Unless you had a din of a nevuah where you have to print it, it's highly, highly immodest. It's also hard to understand where that's from. There's another strange thing, and this is even strange without the Sefer Magid Meisharim. I don't know what to make of it. The Rizal, the Reb Chaim Vital in his Sefer, in Shara Gilgulim, says that the Magid told the Beis Yosef that his son has an Neshama Betzalel, and he writes, and the Magid lied. I don't know how you're supposed to deal with that. I don't know. I don't know what that means. It says v'sheka on, I believe it says. Very, very hard to understand what that means. I don't know. I just, it's a sefer that is really baffling sometimes. Things that are not halachadik, things that are wrong alibid halacha. What does it mean exactly? And some people actually want to tie in it that the Magid Meisharim that we have is a forgery, it's a fake, it never was there, and so on and so forth. It's not that, it's not the basis. There was a sefer. I don't know. I just don't know. It's most of Klal Yisrael seem to have accepted it, but Lesman the Polig, it's very, very baffling things over there. One more tshuva that's interesting to share, and it might sort of nagea today. In Sfas, like the halacha is, Talmidei Chachamim did not need to pay taxes. They needed to pay a certain tax, but they were free from other taxes, like the halacha is. They wanted to be mevatlit, and the Beis Yosef with two others wrote a chayim against it, very sharp. It's his first tshuva in the Beis Yosef that they're being over on Dine Gemara and Dine Suvim and so on, and they were mevatlit. It's an interesting tshuva of his that's relevant. Al Kaponim, he was nifta at the age of 87. He left us in Klal Yisrael the Shulchan Aruch, which together with Ramah, it's that's the halacha we have. The Rabbi Yosef Eibeshitz writes, there's an Indian in halacha in Choshe Mishpat, you can say Kimli, that if let's say two people are arguing in Besdin, one guy can say I hold like the Rashba, and if the Rashba holds like him, Besdin doesn't have the ability to say, well, we pass like Ramban. It as long as you have a shita like you, you can say Kimli. It's one of the most misused halachas. People go find some sheet in some obscure place and toil himself on it, and it makes sometimes a mockery of Pesachim Bezna. The Rebbe Eibeshitz writes that any shita that's not, that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention in the Beis Yosef on Shulchan Aruch, does not have a din of a shita that can say Kimli. The problem is people say Kimli, not Rebbe Eibeshitz. They say we don't hold like Rebbe Eibeshitz. So again, you can't really go anywhere with it. But I can point out that the haracha for the Beis Yosef is that. We'll finish off maybe just with a word of it. He also wrote a sefer on Chumash. It's a very strange, it's interesting sefer. It's, I mean, the typical way is he asks like two dozen shilas on a parsha. He answers each question differently. It's not a pshat he's setting you up with like one teretz, like the Akedah sort of brings a central thought, and then he asks the questions, and then he explains the parasha. And his explanation of parasha is the whole Beis Yosef. Parts of it he explains al pi derech hadrush, parts of it al derech halacha, parts of it al derech hapshat, parts of this or that. We'll give you one example from this week's sedra. It's not in every sedra, it's pieces, but Ish kiyeh b'neged tzara says v'huva l'koyen and so on. So he asks all those questions. We'll just deal with his last question, his first question. His last question, or next last question, is the halacha is that a koyen can't see two negoyim in one day. Why not? So he says, because it says v'timi ha-koyen. He says the koyen is not just the person who sort of is a referee and tells you whether it's a neg or not. The koyin actually is the one that is meishich the tumah down. The riyas hakoyin is meishich the tumah. He says to be mitame somebody with tzaras is to kill him, because a mitzera is chashav kemeis. So he says just like a bezdin can't be done two din nefashos in one day, and just like a bezdin who kills more than one person in a shmita is a katlanis, so too a koyin can't be mitzareya two people one day, because he's the one who's actually killing them. That's what he says. That's sort of halachadik. In at the beginning of the parasha, he's medayik, says the word Adam, the Zohar says that Adam is choshev. In other words, some places it says ish. The Zohar says Adam is choshev, like it says Atem Kriyim Adam v'lom Zohar Kriyim Adam. Adam is losh choshev. So he says the pasuk is tamea, that, you know, Adam that has an exile, how could someone who's Adam, who's Doima HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have done an Aveira to bring himself to Negat Tzaras? It's like the Pasuk is using the Chash of a Lashon, because we're addressing that part of the person and saying, you who are Oymed Ruma Shal Olam, how could you have done something like that? And he says, V'huva La Koyen we bring it to somebody even more chashiv to sort of bring that out in him. In other words, since the level of chet of tzaras that brings tzaras is so deep and so low, we say ourselves, if we bring the person up, if we bring him to the kohen, it will create that'll bring him to see the light, so to speak. In other words, it's a type of avera so low that the way in which we deal with it is we ask him, Adam, how could you have done it? And we bring him to the kohen. My understanding from him is that it means, in other words, the kohen who's kedusha, that's sort of the mahalach of tikkun to it. Those are two inyanim. Al kapanim, Beis Yosef really, really stands in. I mean, this is the pillar of halacha. This is really the last. Anything else is written around him, about him. Nothing else has risen up since that. And it's fascinating that he. It's fascinating that he was given smicha. His whole metzias, where he was acknowledged by everyone. No one. Yes, he had his little fights here, there on specific issues, but everyone accorded him the respect, just like the Arizal. If everyone hadn't given him the acknowledgement that that his Torah is emes, we would have our issues with it. You know, the Beis Yosef, for it to become, Ashkenaz argues on points, but the Rama wrote his Chibur not independently. Ramov was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef and held him in tremendous awe and was a mevatel daita many times, except for Minhag Ashkenaz, when he held it that in Ashkenaz, this is not the halacha. But there was tremendous respect in it. There was only chetimtza, we have some remnant of being able to keep Kais all together. It seems, and again, just to take a broad historical look at it, it was the first time that we got a sense of the churban ha-Torah that the Golos had created by creating different Torahs, every community with its own Torah, with its own inyanim, the need for us to have at least a common standard that everybody can start from the same point. The attempt was done to make a Sanhedrin that failed, but in the failed attempt, somebody was selected to create that standard of a unified Torah. So even with all the details that sometimes when all the Achronim argue with Shulchan Aruch, we go with the Achronim, the Ramah for Ashkenaz, but by and large, it's all about the Shulchan Aruch. It seems as if that was Ke'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'Rov Racham V'Chasad, gave us that, at least a certain pillar to hang on to, a certain bias to be able to hold on to, So that Torah doesn't become a thousand Torahs. So there's one Torah. His yard site is Yud Gimel. Like we said, he was born in 1488, and he died 87 years later. And he's buried in Sfas, together with the Arizal and the Ramak and the other Chabur around him.